We once traveled to Montana, where I met a remarkable man who introduced me to witness trees. In this particular case, the storyteller was talking about 1,000 or 2,000-year-old pine trees that oversaw pack trains first led by Native people and later by miners and then hunters heading into the Bob Marshall Wilderness. On his property, he had several of these old forest sentinels, including one that towered to the heavens where its branches danced in breezes I couldn't feel at ground level. If I looked carefully, I could see marks and scrapes that passing panniers had made high up the trunks. Indians had used the trail passing through his property for centuries, and then our friend had led hunters on quests for big games in the mountains that rose behind his cabin. That old foliage growth told stories if anyone cared to read inscriptions scratched in ancient bark. As soon as I learned about these, I recalled a cottonwood I'd discovered near my home in western Kansas. It was a towering behemoth with a trunk over 23 feet around. Though that cottonwood couldn't be nearly as old as Ed's witnesses, it too had stories to tell. Decades ago, a lightning strike, side effect of mighty prairie thunder boomers, had jaggedly scarred this tree from top to bottom. Additional knots and dings indicated other injuries to it. Mammals and insects had taken advantage and made their homes in resulting crevices and cracks. In addition to these observable marks, I wondered what other tales this tree could tell. How many Cheyenne women and children had it shaded for midday sun? A friend found their stone tools left behind in a nearby field. Buffalo wandering over the prairie looking to wear away winter coats would have rubbed against this corky bark. I suspected soldiers guarding the nearby railroad napped under its branches. How it survived droughts during the 30s, 50s, and now, I don't know. Less than a mile away, a grove of trees, once a favored picnic spot of Ellis old-timers, stands. None of them compares in size to this western Kansas giant, so I know it's old. After this tree triggered my curiosity, I wanted to learn more about cottonwoods. What I discovered surprised me. Early travelers were glad to spot either a lone tree or a stand of trees. One or many provided welcome shade. In addition, pioneers could find dead branches to burn instead of buffalo chips typically used for prairie cooking. Most importantly, cottonwoods can't grow without a reliable source of water. Spotting one meant finding this necessary resource. Before white travelers crossed what was then known as the Great American Desert, migrating Cheyenne, Arapaho, and Sioux sheltered under these trees growing along western Kansas streams and seeps. In dire circumstances, such as deep snow or extended drought, their barks and leaves served as livestock forage. According to Elliot West and the Way West, increased human traffic along the Platte and the Arkansas spelled disaster for most of the early groves. Cottonwoods are more remarkable than I first thought. Simply becoming a tree qualifies them as a witness tree. Their propagating technique is noteworthy. Every spring, male trees unleash a barrage of nearly invisible pollen carried by the wind to the flowers of the female tree. Once pollinated, these mature into necklaces of fruits that we see dangling from those lady trees. After a period of incubation, these fruits explode, unleashing clouds of feathery white seeds that clog filters, coat cars and houses, and hopefully deliver at least one into ideal sprouting conditions. Every female tree has hundreds of fruits filled with thousands of potential cottonwoods, which explains why one Montana Forest Service employee called this the shotgun approach to reproduction. These offspring have no food reserves, so they must immediately find a sunny spot and moist, loose soil if there is hope for them to mature. Once one manages to land in optimal conditions, a root sprouts and begins to grow. Hard times aren't over yet for these guys. Cottonwoods possess a high sugar content, which makes them desirable as critter candy to munchers, grazers, and browsers. If the seedling somehow avoids a snacking deer, elk, cow, or rodent, it faces danger from winter ice and periodic drought. The fact that this massive tree shading Big Creek survived so long amazes me. Learning about cottonwoods makes it clear why Native people such as the Lakota, Cheyenne, Hopi, and Navajo consider them sacred. The Lakota use one as a center pole in their sun dance ceremony. Hopis make their kachinas from roots that have washed loose. Such connections to others' beliefs explains the sense of the sacred I feel when I see these Kansas witness trees. Now I just have to imagine the stories they can tell. Until next time, this is Karen living the good life on the High Plains.